We're happy to welcome back to the program Eric Kingston. He is co-director of the group Strengthen Social Security Campaign. He's professor of social work at Syracuse University School of Social Work and a senior research associate at the Maxwell School Center for Policy Research. Eric, thanks so much for being here with us tonight.
Thank you for having me on and for covering this topic.
Yes, we are here tonight to really check in on a couple of the important elements that are not as much talked about as they should be in the current negotiations between the White House and Congress on increasing the debt ceiling with the doomsday clock ticking towards August 2nd, the deadline we're told for a default on the U.S. debt, which could have a cascade of effect of imploding our economy, higher interest rates, and increased taxes on everyone. We're hoping there's a settlement here with all those without the resulting doomsday predictions. But one of the important things that you're keeping track of, Eric, and I know a lot of people are watching very carefully, is putting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid on the table for dramatic cuts. President Obama has raised this several times in his effort to arrive at a grand bargain with the Republicans, who are standing firm on no new taxes and any other sort of avenue that departs from their doctrinaire opposition to closing tax loopholes or raising taxes on the rich. Anyway, Eric, give us your view on what's going on here as the clock ticks down to August 2nd.
Okay, well, first of all, there is no grand bargain if everybody's Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid is being cut dramatically, which is what's been proposed in part here. Backing up, we have a deficit. It's a long-run deficit one day we have to get to. It is not the most important problem we face. There are many other problems we face. There are 14 million Americans who aren't working. There are two wars that haven't been paid for that are still going. There are huge tax cuts that have brought us to this point, along with the deregulation you mentioned that helped bring us this economy. And there was also the passage of the Medicare Part D, pharmaceutical benefits, which wasn't funded either during the Bush years. So what we have is basically a revenue problem. We have not been responsible in paying for the kinds of policies that particularly took place in the early part of the first decade of the millennium. What we're dealing with is a coordinated effort by some to delegitimize Social Security and Medicare and to define these as core issues with the federal debt. Starting with Social Security, and that's where I'll focus most of my remarks on, Social Security never has and never will borrow a penny because by law it cannot have borrowing authority. It doesn't borrow. If Social Security did not have enough resources coming into it, then benefits by law would be reduced. So Social Security has absolutely no place in the deficit discussion. Unfortunately, the strategy of many who have been building this deficit argument has been to throw Social Security in, talk about entitlements, these horrible things. These things called Social Security and Medicare, which are life-saving and compassion-building in our society. These horrible deficits are the cause of the deficit. Just not the case. But the strategy has been to confound the discussion by pretending that Social Security is part of a deficit problem. The politicians, when asked directly, they say, oh, no, it isn't really part of the problem, but since we're going to be trying to fix the deficit, we're also going to fix Social Security, too. It's a false debate. It's a false crisis. We have a program that is usually popular to the American public. The public is really very different in their views than Washington. Outside of the Beltway, the public says, don't touch my Social Security, don't touch my Medicare. We don't want to see these benefits reduced. In the case of Social Security, they say, we'd rather pay increased taxes. The one thing the public is clear on, they would like to see all Americans pay the same 6.2% on their earnings as the great bulk of Americans who have earnings under $106,800. And if that happens, the projected shortfall in Social Security would be addressed. So we have all sorts of pieces, moving parts here. The White House seems to have been willing to put Social Security and Medicare into play, at least it would seem that way, and I think in an irresponsible way, in terms of the federal deficit. The White House isn't at fault for this horrible debt and social negotiations that are taking place. Basically, the Republicans have been unprincipled in their holding hostage the debt ceiling. But in that in the effort to accommodate a hostage-taking of the U.S. government and of the full faith and credit of the United States government, the White House and some members of Congress have been willing to deeply compromise Social Security and Medicare.
Eric Kingston, as we talked about a moment ago, President Obama has put squarely on the table Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid as a bargaining chip with the Republicans to say shared sacrifice means Obama says he'll cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid if the Republicans remove tax subsidies for private jet owners and big oil companies. What exactly do you feel is his motivation in terms of putting on the chopping block these very popular programs that that are really a lifeline to some of the poorest, sickest, and most elderly people in the country who've put a lot of money into these programs in exchange for some minor concessions on the part of Republicans?
I don't know what his motivation is. I'm not going to try to guess that. What I do know is what the effect of doing this is. The president politically, well, first, more important in terms of human beings, the cost of living adjustment and Social Security has been put on the table. The president had promised he would not cut benefits for current beneficiaries, but the current proposal that we hear has been on the table is to change the cost of living adjustment so that over time, everybody receives a smaller benefit. Someone who's 65 today, when they're 85, would get a cost of living adjustment that would be worth $1,000 less that year. So there's a decision made to pull some dollars out of pockets of hard-working people, people who've earned their benefits. And that contradicts the promises the president has made. It contradicts the promises of Democrats and Republicans, many Republicans, if we move forward with that. Also on the table, as part of the effort to show how balanced they are, we hear the idea of raising the Medicare retirement age to 67. Absolutely absurd. We should be talking about lowering the age of Medicare to cover older workers who are unable to maintain their employment in a very difficult economy, many of whom leave work because of health problems. We were going in the right direction with the Affordable Care Act, not perfect, but moving forward. This contradicts the act. It's horrible that this has been put forward as a negotiable item. The motivation, I believe, is to show how reasonable we are, but frankly, with hostage takers, I don't think we should be exercising reason. It would be my hope that the president would go to the American public and say, look, here's what's at stake. But beyond, it's extremely important, and I've just mentioned this, the Strengthen Social Security campaign, www.strengthensocialsecurity.org. That's strengthensocialsecurity.org. We're working hard to send a message to the White House, to members of Congress, to key senators, to senators, that we do not believe benefits should be cut, that our economy is such that we ought not put the benefits of hardworking people, of people in their 50s, their 40s, their 30s, at risk. We're encouraging people to call into their members of Congress, their senators, and to the White House and to say, don't cut my Social Security, don't cut my Medicare, don't cut Medicaid. Let's stop this foolishness. Let's protect these systems.
Eric, you and the folks at Strengthen Security Coalition, you have some contacts at the White House and in the leadership of Congress. And What are you hearing in terms of the likelihood that the White House, President Obama, and the Democrats are going to cave in some way on making cutbacks to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? What's the likelihood that you hear right now?
First of all, let me just start this by saying it's important to understand that Social Security is adequately financed for 25 years. Under the best estimates, the Congressional Budget Office, the Social Security actuaries, various people who make it, say it can pay all benefits out 25 years. And then after that, after about 2035, it's about 23 cents short on the dollar. And that can be addressed in a variety of ways. So you could eliminate the cap, meaning scrap the cap, asking Americans to pay 6.2% on all their earnings. You could, for instance, to get a sense of the dimension of this problem, the projected cost, the projected shortfall in Social Security is the equivalent to roughly what it would cost to continue the Bush tax cuts for the richest 2% of Americans. So these are not difficult. This is not a difficult problem to address. It's a matter of political choice. What is difficult, and what we're hearing is on the tape, well, the other thing is these problems should be addressed, and they should be addressed in time, not under not in the crisis mentality of raising the debt ceiling, because Social Security has nothing to do with that. They should be addressed as they've always been addressed, by going through Congress, enabling the American public to see what's happening and to weigh in on the choices. The greatest worry I have right now that we have is that the White House and others may be willing to trade off the cost of living adjustment. There's this technical thing that some economists love. It's a lot of techno-speak, but the bottom line is it's called the chain CPI. The bottom line is it will take a little bit of money away from everybody who receives benefits today and in the future. And over time, a little bit of money adds up to lots of dollars. As I mentioned, after 20 years on receiving Social Security, it would be about a $1,000 loss in the 20th year. Now, benefits are modest, just $14,000 on average. So it would be like turning their benefit into $13,000. That, I think, is on the table because a lot of the smart people in Washington think this is just a reasonable compromise to make in order to gain some other revenues for the federal government. I'm also concerned that there's a discussion of extending the 2 percentage point payroll tax holiday to employers. The idea here is that to encourage employers to hire more people, they would lower the Social Security payroll tax on them. Problem is, many of those employers aren't in a position to hire people because there's no demand for their products. And what we need to do is be pumping some money out to people who are going to spend it, particularly unemployed people. We should probably be looking at public works programs. The other problem is that some of the corporations that get the money would be getting this money are the same corporations that have found it more profitable to lay off workers during this recession, and it's highly unlikely that they're going to be encouraged by that. So there are two things on the table there. Long term, what's on the table, in terms of Medicare, there's this whole discussion of whether to raise the retirement age that's come up, which is just, as I mentioned, a very unfortunate. The Republicans have been gunning on Medicaid and basically trying to turn Medicaid over to the states through block granting and through cutting the funding for it. All of these things, what's problematic is that there are human beings behind each and every one of these changes, and these people are not being given voice by policymakers in Washington. And the policymakers in Washington seem quite detached in many ways from the American people who keep saying, and this goes for, by the way, Tea Partiers as well as union households. Polling that I'm familiar with and that we did, our national polling, about 78% say don't cut benefits to deal with the deficit, don't raise the retirement age. You run that by different groups, and what you find is the great majority of Tea Partiers, about 69% as I recall, say don't cut Social Security benefits. Union households, it's about 82%. There's strong support for maintaining these benefits, and I think if our politicians decide to make some cuts at this time, it's going to be at their peril, because this is a time when Americans have lost housing equity, they've lost homes in some cases, they've lost jobs, they've lost pay raises in some cases, if not jobs, they've lost their pension protections or have had their pension protections diminished, if they have any. The one thing they still have is Social Security and Medicare as core protection for the American people. And government ought to be shoring these up and not scaring the American people that somehow these have to be on the chopping block.
Eric Kingston, there's a slogan in Europe as people in the streets there oppose austerity measures in places like Greece and Ireland and Spain. And I'm wondering what the slogan is, we won't pay for their crisis. In your view, who should pay for the crisis we're going through right now in the United States? Who's responsible and who should pay?
I'm not speaking for the campaign when I'm saying this. I'm going to speak as Eric Kingston, citizen, okay? Firstly, we ought to be expecting people to... We ought to recognize that a lot of the crisis we're facing, the short-term crisis... Well, several things. Firstly, it comes from tax cuts that have been largely beneficial to the very well-off. It comes from running two lousy wars where we've put up our men, our young men and young women, send them in harm's way, and haven't always equipped them as well as we should, but we haven't even sacrificed at home by increasing taxes for them, taxes to cover these wars. We need to be out of these wars. I think we need to hold responsible people on Wall Street, people in the banks who almost collapsed our economy. To most Americans, the imagery we have is we had this near crisis, the banks got bailed out, and now all these folks are getting big bonuses and nobody's gone to jail. There's something wrong. There's a different standard being applied to groups that have wealth in our society and control. So I'll just leave it. Could you repeat the question again? Scott?
I think you answered it very well, Eric. And, who should pay? Who should pay for the crisis?
Yeah. Well, the people who should be paying are the people who have been receiving these large tax cuts. We can afford it, those who are in that situation, and that's where we have a revenue problem, not a spending problem primarily. The other thing is we ought to be thinking about how these crises are manufactured. Again, I'm speaking as Eric Kingston individual here. The debt crisis is a manufactured crisis. There have been 75 times that the U.S. debt has been raised since John Kennedy. Typically, the party out of power votes against it and complains that the party in power is raising the debt ceiling. And then it reverses in a few years, but basically nobody's really tried to hold it hostage. Now we have this artificial crisis brought about by strong advocacy that defines the debt as the core problem of this country. We have more serious problems. We certainly want to control the long-term debt, but to do that, we have to get a hold of our health care costs. This isn't about cutting our core services. It's about... If we were running the healthcare costs at the same as other industrial capitalist nations, if our healthcare costs were the same, there would be about half the cost per person of what we spend today, and we'd have more people covered, and we'd have higher outcomes, better outcomes too. We need to get control of healthcare costs. We need to expect our citizens and build a framework where we start talking about what we get for taxes, but we need to understand that there's a huge effort to shrink government, to shrink services, and fundamentally, when, you know, at a very simple level, government is about doing for all of us, doing for each other what we can't do for ourselves. And we're going too far, and we're going to find ourselves in difficulty. We're also going usually too far in terms of focusing on the deficit, because it's going to push us right back into a recession if we're not out of it, or if we're not in it already. Simple economics tells you, you don't reduce federal spending in the midst of a huge recession like what we have. We should be putting people to work, using those human resources, building our infrastructure. And then, as we get out of this recession and more people are working, more people paying taxes, then you start slowing down the deficit. But it's a secondary problem. 14 million Americans not working, many others working at minimum levels that relative to their training, two wars that are going nowhere. These are real problems. People are dying. People deserve to be treated with dignity, and our country is better than what we're doing right now.
Eric, just a final note here. We've only got about 30 seconds left, but recap for us, if you would. Tell us what your group, Strength and Social Security Campaign, a coalition of groups all over the country, what are they doing to ensure or to do their best to prevent the White House and Congress from axing Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid?
We're a coalition of over 320 organizations, from the major unions who are represented to major women's, major disability, aging groups, human rights groups, a whole range of groups. And the basic message is Social Security works. And the other piece of that message is don't cut it. Americans rely on it. Americans have a different view. What we're doing right now is we're focusing very heavily on the cost of living adjustment proposals that have been put on the table. We're also trying to send a message and encourage our friends in the White House to pivot and move away from putting Social Security on the chopping block. Particularly sending messages to all members, particularly the Republicans, that if they push cuts in Social Security, their constituents aren't going to be happy, not even the Republican constituents. They, too, do not want to see this cut. So we're encouraging people to call their members of Congress, call the White House, call their senators, answer talk radio, send letters to their local newspapers. It doesn't have to be the major newspaper in the country, but local newspapers matter. Let people know how you feel and what you believe should be happening, and also send the message, when we deal with Social Security, don't deal with it behind closed doors. It has to be dealt with in the open because it's such a trust for the American people, and it always has been. Let's not have a sneak attack on Social Security.
Eric, thanks for being here tonight and all the work you do on this important topic, and best of luck in the coming weeks as this end game unfolds here. And leave our listeners with a website.
Okay. StrengthenSocialSecurity.org. And Scott, thank you very much for the time and energy you put into this and other issues.
All right. Appreciate it, Eric. We'll hope to talk again, maybe under some more brighter prospects.
I hope so. We all have some good work to do, so let's do it.
Take care, Eric.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Eric Kingston, co-director of the group Strengthen Social Security Campaign.